taxi industry standoff with the government has once again highlighted the tensions that exist between the business interests of the country as well as employment situation and the restrictions imposed on the economy by the government. And this, as we've seen, has led to the industry saying that they are now going to load to full capacity 100% instead of the 70% that they had agreed to with the Department of Transport some months ago. And this has led to new fears that this is going to exacerbate the transmission of the COVID-19 throughout the nation. But then people have got to work and they've got to balance the interests between protecting their lives and their livelihoods. One person who is knowledgeable on these matters and has got strong opinions is Mr. Tebogo Kass, who is the founder of the SMME Forum. And he also goes by Asymptomatic and COVID-19 as his handle on Twitter. Mr. Kass, thank you very much for joining me. And first, tell me, why Asymptomatic and COVID-19 handle?
Thanks, Mr. Mdisa. If I may deal with the last part, which is a low ball, I will accept. The reason I assumed that handle and Asymptomatic and COVID-19 is to propagate the awareness that much as I might not present with symptoms of having been infected with the coronavirus, I might be a carrier. I might be actually positive. Unknowingly, I might then expose others to the disease. And the corollary also works. I always assume that the next person is also COVID-19 positive, and therefore I would expect them, much as I would, to take such measures as they would to ensure that we keep each other and those around us safe. It is a very difficult period that we're living in, but as long as we always keep it in our consciousness that we might be spreading, we might be carriers or potential spreaders of this dreaded disease. And that is the awareness that I'm hoping that communities at large, especially if you look at where you come from or we live in the townships and so forth, you can see the cavalier manner in which people go about their business. It appalls me when I go into Deep Kloof, Bedoel, and so forth to see people just walking around or driving around, or if you're driving your car, it's fine, but walking around with no covered mouth coverings or any facial mask on themselves. And it is a worrisome situation because we do not know who's next and we cannot have a cure for this disease. Now, having said that, and to address the question about the taxi industry decision of today to revert to loading 100% passenger loads, I must at the outset state it very clearly that I sympathize deeply with the taxi industry, and not only the taxi industry, just as I would with any other industry, especially the small business sector, for the hardship that everybody is enduring since the lockdown began. And also with the same breath, I would like to say it still baffles my mind and probably many others as to what is the rationale behind even the 70% load factor. Because I do not want to believe that if you reduce from loading 10 people and loading 7 people, it makes it much safer in a taxi, or 5 people or 3 people in a taxi are not capable of transmitting the disease. But then again, I suppose we have to do a balancing act in terms of whether we're going to close down the economy and make sure that people don't travel at all completely, or we do it with minimizing the risk. I suppose the latter part is what informs the powers that be in terms of the regulation to 70%. But having imposed a 70% restriction, there ought to be some mitigating factors that ought to have been put in place by government to ensure that the hardship that would be endured by the taxi industries who are being called upon to provide transportation for essential services, workers, without really making the kind of revenue that they're used to, they should have been made provisions for. But with the same breath, I'd say it would have been easier if the taxi industry itself was formalized in one form or the other. Because As we speak today, I'm unsure if government knows exactly the number of people who own taxis, who operate taxis, who work in the taxi industry. And also, it might very well be that some people do contribute to the unemployment insurance fund, but I do not think most operators or even employers or employees within the taxi industry themselves contribute to the UIF benefits. And as we have seen, some companies have been exposed as they were approaching the UIF authorities to try and lodge claims for the employees that they were not contributing at all. And it creates a situation where now you're opening yourself to potential knock on your door by the authorities to say you've been operating, you haven't been contributing your employment levies and so forth. And SARS also will be knocking on your door also for one reason or other. And so if you have been outside of the radar, the tax radar, it becomes difficult for any employer to actually or entrepreneur to go there if you know that you are not compliant. But having said that, I want to believe that what the taxi industries did yesterday or even today by unilaterally breaking the laws is just to show that the kind of scandal that the industry has on the laws of this country. And we can only hope that other subsectors of the economy, such as the liquor traders and so forth, did not follow in the same footstep as the taxi industry. Because can you imagine if now the taverns, the bottle stores, or maybe so the taverns start breaking the laws and say, we're also going to sell alcohol. If the taxi industry can break the laws, what is stopping us? There will just be chaos. And such a dystopian situation, it's becoming more and more of a reality. The point is, should government be using force to try and enforce compliance, or are there other mechanisms that can be pursued? It's a difficult position for government to find itself in. It is also a difficult position for the taxi industry itself to find itself in, where it's expected to provide a service at near half capacity of what they would otherwise be getting.
Now, when you talk about the hardship that the restrictions have imposed on the taxi industry, it reminds me of other sectors as well, or other industries. Tourism, for instance, it is still under serious restrictions as we speak. The tobacco industry has also experienced the severest of the restrictions. They've taken their lockdown restrictions to the courts as we speak. And there's been talk that the illicit tobacco trade is doing very well in South Africa under these conditions. So what is your comment regarding how some of these restrictions were imposed and forced?
Look, to start with, I think some of the restrictions, while I want to cut government ministries some slack and say they've got their heart in the right place, but I think they are all nonsensical in many respects. I'll give you, for example, the alcohol and the tobacco regulations. Other than Botswana, who just lifted that ban recently, there's no other country in the whole world where such a ban was ever enacted. And if it was indeed true that banning the cigarette smoking or cigarette sales and alcohol was a factor in fighting the spread of the pandemic, we wouldn't be ranking up with the highest infected or countries with infections. I think I saw something over the weekend, we were number 8 or in the top 20 for all the wrong reasons. So, and amongst countries who do not even have the alcohol and cigarette ban. So that is one problem with it. And the upside or the flip side of the coin is you now encourage criminality. And we're living in a country that is battling high crime rates. And then by creating otherwise law-abiding citizens who just happen to be smokers, in turning them into criminals, it just doesn't make sense. And also, we have seen reports that over the period of the lockdown, the local economy was deprived of about 3.5 billion rands in taxes. And yet we go to IMF and other entities begging for funding. That is money that could have easily been used to stymie the hardship that the economy is enduring. And the same applies with the alcohol ban, which now creates avenues for bootlegging and depriving the fiscals of the tax revenue, not so much as it does with cigarettes. But we must also say we are encouraged by the fact that the big players, be they SA Breweries or the BAT companies and so forth, they seem to be responsible corporate citizens. That type of responsibility doesn't seem to be replicated in other sectors such as the taxi industry. And it is unfortunate that is most of the people who utilize the minibus taxis are people who are poor, vulnerable, or workers who depend on their earnings, day-to-day earnings, to make a livelihood. And those are the people that, unfortunately, when they get infected or contract the coronavirus, they are most likely going to pass it on to whomever it is that they interact with in the mainstream economy. And you can imagine what the unintended consequences of such greed from the taxi industries might very well be. And it is very sad that once one, on the one hand, you might want to empathize with the industry, but also at the same time, you're saying, is it worth risking the lives of ordinary workers, poor people, vulnerable people, because of the current situation that which everybody is suffering?
Talking about the economy, the Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, recently spoke about the difficulties that we face as a nation and said that the economy was going to contract and we may need to go and borrow from the multilateral institutions, and that the budget may be constrained by more than 300 billion rands for that matter in the process. So one wonders, what is going to happen then? Well, the growth is gone, but and the jobs are going over 80,000 apparently during the lockdown. People have been retrenched. What do you think is going to happen to the economy, or is happening now? And how do we get out of this situation where jobs are being lost, businesses are closing down, and the fiscus itself is losing the revenues, as you mentioned earlier?
I'm sure we are all alive to the fact that even before coronavirus became a lexicon in our own public discourse, some of us didn't even know about the existence of corona before. The only corona knew was a beer. But be that as it may, we knew that our economy was already embattled. We know that our economy was in the doldrum. The so-called 9, and some argue 26 years of ANC rule, was just a disaster. Our economy was facing high unemployment rate. I think at the time it was sitting at around 27 or thereabout. Our GDP was hovering below 2%, if not below 1%, depending on who you chat with. With this happening now, we've been projected that in the next financial year, the economy will contract by about 8%. And as you rightly mentioned, one third of our revenue target will be missed, the 300 odd billion rands. And it is a dire situation. Probably if you were to ask today or do an extrapolation, the unemployment rate will be sitting at more than 40%. This is an arduous task that any nation would be faced with. And it is even much more so if you, given the fact that our own government doesn't have the fiscal play to be able to rearrange or move around funds from one area and reallocate it to another area, because we just don't have the tax base is also has shrunk. And even those with a larger tax base, as you take the U.S. as an example, much as they were able to issue those XPP checks, you know, now they're actually saying they're relooking it, they cannot do it another round, so they're forced to reopen the economy. So in our instance, it is even much more so dire, because we're an economy whose industrial and manufacturing base had been whittled down over the years. We import, I think our balance of payment doesn't look too good at all. We import more than we export. We are a net importer. And a result is it's going to take a whole lot of re-engineering the economy to make sure that the basics get to be done and they get to be done well. But to be able to even begin with that, there are some fundamental issues that are needed to be tackled. For example, there needs to be restructuring of the economy. And that will require a lot of difficult but necessary decisions that have to be done. We have to, first of all, the public wage bill has to be cut. We cannot sustain the kind of public wage bill that we endure. We have to make sure that our interest repayments of our loans on the exposure that we have is also put in check, which is why I think the budget, as Minister Mboweni had announced, a zero-based budgeting methodology could very well be helpful. But to the extent that we've got a lot of venal characters within the system, corruption is everywhere worldwide, but we seem to be excelling in that. We are going to find it very difficult for people to really be realistic and say, yes, these line items, we really don't need it. We can do without it. Because it would mean that those who depend on the public purse to advance their political agendas might find it difficult to continue in the same vein as they had been used to. So it is a good thing, but whether it practically is going to happen is another thing. Because it requires diligence, it requires commitment, it requires forthrightness on the part of those who are tasked with managing the public purse. And I doubt it if we are at the stage where people would really be able to look beyond their selfish or narrow interests and look at the interests of the country. But if we don't do anything, we are doomed as a nation. But before I wrap on just that point, what I liked also on what Minister Mboweni announced was to refocus again and say, and I think this was directed to big business, especially in the leisure industry, when he said he doesn't see why restaurants, leisure industry would be employing 100% in some instances foreigners. When go back 26 years ago, you would find that out of the 10 people were employed in any establishment, you'd find that 8 at least would be South African. If you don't create a sense where there's hope for the local populace, that there's hope for them, you're just asking for civil war. And we hope we do not find this pandemic being the one that will ignite the tinderbox that seems to have been set for all these years. And I think this is a perfect moment to go back as government and make sure that they implement the kind of thinking that we've seen coming out. But it's not going to be easy because we've got vested interests. If you've seen some documents circulating recently, purportedly at the instance of the ANC Deputy Secretary General, in which appointments to the boards of SOEs and so forth or to be vetted and approved by the Tuli House, it means you're not going to get the best people, necessarily the best people for the job, because you're going to find that patronage and political influence is still going to direct as to who are the individuals who ultimately become appointed for those key positions in the public sector. So we'll basically be going back to the same drawing board. Incidentally, as we're trying to establish this connection, I was in conversation with a very close friend of mine who is also in the leisure industry, who indicates that out of abundance of caution, he decided he wants to pull out of the he would be relinquishing his role because the industry doesn't see the industry recovering, not even to the 50% type of revenue stream that they were accustomed to. That tells you a lot. And also there's going to be a need to cut down on the number of employees in that space. Because even if they say the lockdown is over, we're back at level zero next month, nobody will be going rushing to the casinos, those contained, confined spaces, to go and play the roulette machines or, those one-arm bandit machines, whatever they're called. Because we will all be saying we want to preserve limb. So the economy is going to take a long while, and long, painful decisions ought to be taken before we can even begin to think we are clawing back some of the losses that we've otherwise enjoyed before. Multiplicity of reasons.
As we conclude, and briefly, tell me anecdotally, what are some of your members or friends in the business community telling you about their experiences? What is happening? You've mentioned one who says he's pulling out of the leisure industry, but what's happening in the real economy anecdotally? Are people seeing opportunities or creating new opportunities, or are people despondent and just closing shop?
The one thing that I've realized is since the beginning of this sketch, it has taken a toll. I know I have felt the strain myself on almost a daily basis. These days is becoming better, but on almost a daily basis, I'll be fielding calls from entrepreneurs, some running businesses that otherwise had the potential to grow and be sustainable and keep employing people, but who are about to give up because either they are not being paid on time or either some of the major customers are just playing fast and loose, almost invoking force majeure for whatever reasons that don't seem to make any legal sense. But the stress is palpable in the sector, especially for entrepreneurs. And what I have also been observed is the frustrations where you'd find the likes of the UIF benefits system not being helpful at all. You must have picked up in the mainstream media recently of the kind of fraud and corruption that has been going on within that. People creating pseudo companies to channel funds that they do not, they're not entitled to benefit themselves, just going by, allegedly to go and buy tombstones and so forth. It is sad that people don't realize that their little action or actions, no matter how isolated they may be, they've got the potential to break companies, to break families and their livelihoods. And that in turn is not good for the socio-economic contract that we all have signed up to. And that for me is the biggest pain that one could endure. We've got people who are committed to doing their best in terms of serving the country in whatever capacity, as a cashier or as a security or as a delivery person. And we've got the level of crime that is also creeping in. And unfortunately, we do not see any tangible action, even by those tasked with responsibility of ensuring this compliance, doing much about it. Instead, it is the citizen who seems to be law-abiding, who seem to be made examples of. So it's going to take a while. And once all this is happening, I mean, if you look at the U.S., for example, since for the past 3 months, I saw a report yesterday, there was about 4,000 or 40,000, I think 4,000, I'll leave it 4,000 companies that have already applied for liquidation. JCPenney, JCCrew, you name them, they are all being liquidated left, center, and right. What does that mean if bigger companies with some sort of cushion, financial cushion, can now bail out? What about the small companies who may be limited in terms of their reserves? It means most of them are just going to be withered. And what about those who largely also depend on the public sector? They're just going to, you know, find it difficult to even continue. But having painted such a dire picture, which is the reality of the situation, unfortunately, it is necessary that we confront it. I am rather hopeful because I do know there are projects within the driven from the presidency which seek to address some of the economic implications imposed by the coronavirus pandemic. For example, one of the projects would be looking at the ICT space and seeking to employ about 10,000 unemployed black graduates. Certainly that will go a long way towards creating some employment opportunities, even though it may not be financially as rewarding as otherwise it would be. You'd have others in the agricultural sector, you've got some in the mining sector, you've got all these presidential projects that are shovel ready, which have got allocated funding to make sure that they see the light of day. And we can only say that offers a glimmer of hope to those people who still can be able to offer something to the economy as we seek to rebuild it.
Mr. Teboho Kass, the founder of SMME Forum, as well, he goes under the handle on Twitter as Asymptomatic and COVID-19. Thanks very much for talking to me and sharing with me your thoughts on what is developing in the economic space of South Africa. I appreciate it.
All the best.